the Labor Committee to order. Senator McEwen is introducing Senate File 2782.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. That is correct. I actually have an A5 amendment for Senate File 2782, which is a delete all amendment. This is our finance omnibus bill.
Okay, Senator McEwen introduces the A5 amendment. This is an author's amendment. Any discussion? Otherwise, those in favor. Oh, I'm sorry. Do you want to explain it, Senator McEwen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All of our presentation today will be of the A5 amendment, and then we will take it up on Thursday for discussion and amendments, so people can take notes today on the presentation of the bill and the testifiers and the testimony, and then we'll take it up again on Thursday.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I think it is appropriate to move the A5 amendment.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. Those in favor of the A5 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Okay, the A5 amendment is adopted. We'll now move to a walkthrough by nonpartisan staff. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of this committee. In your packets, you should have a spreadsheet. On the far left-hand side of the spreadsheet, and just to give a little basis for the spreadsheet, this goes through Article 1 and also touches a bit on the statutory appropriations and other articles within this bill. So the far left-hand column includes which department it is in, the agencies, and where the funds are going to, and it also describes the fund. Columns A through C show the February 23 forecast base. Columns D through G show the governor's revised budget recommendations. And columns H through K, which is where we'll primarily be focusing on during this walkthrough, is Senate File 2782 as amended. There are a couple errors within the spreadsheet, and there will be a technical amendment to make sure that all the numbers match up on Thursday ahead of time, and I will clearly explain the errors. It had to do with Excel drag down issue on my part. So just to clarify, all the numbers on this spreadsheet are in thousands of dollars. I will be talking primarily about the change items rather than just going through every single base appropriation. So we will begin with the Department of Labor and Industry. So within their workers' compensation area on line 6, to maintain current service levels, Senate File 2782 proposes approximately $1.1 million of additional workers' compensation spending in the 24-25 biennium and approximately $1.5 million in the 26-27 biennium. For technology services reorganization on line 6, it's $6.1 million approximately from the Workers' Compensation Fund and $6.2 million in the 26-27 biennium. And that brings us to a total increase for the 24-25 biennium for the Workers' Compensation Division of $7.2 million. This is on line 13. And in the 24-25 biennium and $7.7 million in the 26-27 biennium. Moving on to the Workforce Development Initiatives division within DLI, on line 19, there's the Youth Skills Training Program. This is coming from the Workforce Development Fund. Looking at column I here, you can see it's $1.5 million of additional Workforce Development Fund appropriation and in the 24-25 biennium and $1.5 million in the 26-27 biennium. Also on line 24, there is, for the Career Pathways Program from the Workforce Development Fund, there is $300,000 of additional spending in the 24-25 biennium, and that's a one-time appropriation. Moving down to line 31, so for the Workforce Development Initiatives Department, that totals to an additional spend of $1.8 million from the Workforce Development Fund in the 24-25 biennium and $1.5 million in the 26-27 biennium. Moving to page 2, we move to the Labor Standards Division. So on line 36, for nursing and lactating mothers leave, or WISA outreach, this is coming from the general fund. It's $476,000 above base in the 24-25 biennium and $484,000 in the 26-27 biennium. To maintain current service levels, it is $393,000 in the 24-25 biennium and $492,000 in the 26-27 biennium. For the safety and well-being of agriculture and food processing workers, general fund, that's $326,000 in the 24-25 biennium and $284,000 in the 26-27 biennium. Moving down to the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board, this is for the board creation and rulemaking. This is on line 41. We see approximately $1 million in the 24-25 biennium and $761,000 in the 26-27 biennium. Also for medical assistance with DHS for the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board, there is an assumed cost of $69,000 in the fiscal year 27. So there is that also comes from the general fund for that year. Moving down for the safe, on line 44, the safe workplaces for meat and poultry processing workers. This is an appropriation to the AGO from the general fund of $383,000 on the 24-25 biennium and $276,000 in the 26-27 biennium. So for line 45, for the qualifying damages tax subtraction admin, that is $84,000 in the 24-25 biennium and $50,000 in the 26-27 biennium. On line 46, the construction worker wage protection. This is to the Attorney General's Office for Enforcement. That's $350,000 in the 24-25 biennium and $350,000 in the 26-27 biennium. So for the total appropriations from the for the Labor Standards Division, we see from the general fund it's approximately $3.4 million. This is on line 53, $3.4 million above base in 24-25 and $3.1 million above base in 26-27. And then from the Workforce Development Fund, it's approximately $354,000 above base in the 24-25 biennium and $426,000 above base in the 26-27 biennium. Moving on to the apprenticeship. Got too far ahead of myself. I skipped some lines. So for prevailing wage enforcement on line 49, just to back up a bit, it's approximately $2.9 million for prevailing wage enforcement from the Workforce Development Fund in 24-25 and approximately $3 million in 26-27 from the Workforce Development Fund. And then to maintain current service levels for the apprenticeship division, that is $180,000 in the 24-25 biennium and $242,000 in the 26-27 biennium. Line 31 shows the transfer to the new apprenticeship division. So on line, that includes line 48 and line 50. So I will describe, so those transfers will now be seen on line 57. So moving on to line 57, we see within this new agency, it's 2.7 over base, but 2.5 of that is additional spending. I mean, it is in the base, so it's just that same maintaining current service levels amount of 180 in 24-25 and 100 and 242 in 26-27. But move, sorry, that was a little confusing. On line 58, for the Growing Clean Economy Apprenticeships. This is from the Workforce Development Fund. That's a one-time spending of $3 million in fiscal year 2024. For LEAP grants and expanding equity and apprenticeships, this is also from the Workforce Development Fund. This is on line 59. It's approximately $2.1 million in fiscal year 2024, in the 24-25 biennium, and approximately $2.1 million of additional spending in the 26-27 biennium. So for the apprenticeships, total appropriations from the Workforce Development Fund, it's $8.2 million of additional spending in the 24-25 biennium and $5.3 million of additional spending in the 26-27 biennium. There is a slight error on this line in column E. Let's see here. Actually, it is in... My apologies. It is in, column D. I did not drag a row down. So instead of $5.7 million for the governor's recs, it should be approximately $7.7 million. And again, I will share an updated spreadsheet with the committee that accurately reflects the governor's recs. And then for line 61, helmets to hard hats. This is from the Workforce Development Fund. There's $450,000 in additional spending in 24-25 and $450,000 in 26-27. Moving down to workplace safety on line 65 for the Minnesota OSHA Regulation of Ergonomic Injuries Safety Grants. This comes from the governor's recs. Revised recommendations. There is one-time general fund spending from in fiscal year 2024 of approximately $1.3 million for the biennium. And then on line 67 from the Workers' Compensation Fund to maintain current service levels. That's not a change item. On line 68 for the Minnesota OSHA Regulation of Ergonomic Injuries, Staffing, Education, Outreach, and Tech. There is $1.6 million of additional spending in 24-25 and $2.7 million in 26-27. And to maintain current service levels on line 67, I'm sorry, I'm jumping around. It's $720,000 in the 24-25 biennium from the Workers' Compensation Fund and $966,000 in the 26-27 biennium. Line 69, the Warehouse Distribution Worker Safety Act, Senate File 58, is traveling separately, but it's still we're still tracking it here in the spreadsheet. So that's $458,000 from the Workers' Compensation Fund in 24-25 and $436,000 in 26-27. Moving on to page 3. Here is where there is a slight issue inside the bill itself, and this is where there will be a technical amendment. The omnibus currently contains appropriation amounts that include Senate File 58, but that amount per fiscal year will be subtracted out in a technical amendment. So the all funds in the omnibus bill on line 74 will be reads $7,043,000 in fiscal year 24, $6,681,000 in fiscal year 25 for a total change, for a total $13.7 million and a change compared to the base of $3.6 million. Moving on to the general support division on line 80 for maintaining current service levels. It's $4.6 million for the biennium in 24-25 over the base and $4.9 million in 26-27 over the base to maintain current service levels within the general support division. And then on line 81 for technology services reorganization, it's 1.23 million over the base for 24-25. This is from the workers' compensation fund, and 1.27 million over the base in 26-27. Moving on to the DLI Office of Combative Sports. So for the combative sports health and safety improvements, this is on line 88. It's 497,000 of general fund spending over the base and in 24-25, and 508,000 in 26-27 over the base. So for department totals, for starting on line 92, for general fund, it's an additional 5.18 million over the base for DLI in 24-25 and 3.6 million in 26-27. In the workers' compensation fund, it's 15.3 million over the base in 24-25 and for the workers' compensation fund on line 93, it is 15.7 million over the base in 24-25 and 17.8 million in 26-27 over the base. Then for total amounts including for workforce development fund on line 95, it's 10.4 million of additional spending in 24-25 and 7.3 million in 26-27 of additional workforce development fund spending. So there is an error here for the total direct appropriations, and I will again provide an accurate spreadsheet to the committee, but the total change amount above base for all direct appropriations should be 31.3 million for 24-25 and 28.7 million in 26-27. Moving on to statutory and open appropriations, for the Office of Combative Sports, this is on line 101 from the Special Revenue Fund. This is appropriations from the Special Revenue Fund. It's 30,000 in 24-25 and 30,000 in 26-27 for a biennial total. On line 103 for this climate subcabinet commercial energy code improvements, it's 100,000 in the construction code fund of in fiscal year 2024. For the electric vehicle charging infrastructure, it's 163,000 in fiscal year 24, also from the construction code fund. For existing buildings energy efficiency, it's 406,000 in fiscal year 24. For safe housing for elderly and vulnerable adults, this is 429,000 in from the construction code in fiscal year in the 24-25 biennium and 1 million in the 26-27 biennium. Moving down to line 107 for window cleaning safety, this is from the construction code fund, another 193,000 in fiscal year 24. And then for the adult changing room facilities, that's 47,000 in fiscal year 24. Okay. And then looking at new revenues to DLI, starting on top of page 4 here at line 112. So for the Minnesota OSHA federal maximum conformity, we're looking at this is in the workers' compensation fund of 251,000 in the 24-25 biennium and 261,000 in the 26-27 biennium. For prevailing wage education and compliance, this is DLI's enforcement revenue. We're looking at 36,000 in 24-25 biennium and an additional 50,000 in the 26-27 biennium. On line 114 for the combative sports health and safety improvements, this is to the special revenue fund. It's 30,000 in the 24-25 biennium and 30,000 in the 26-27 biennium. And then on line 115. It's also this to the construction code for the safe housing for elderly and vulnerable adults. It's 429,000 to 2425 by AM and approximately 1 million to 2627 by AM. For the Safe and Skilled Workers Act, that is Senate File 10, that's traveling separately. They're anticipating enforcement revenue of 10,000 in the 2425 by AM and 10,000 in the 2627 by AM. This is coming from the general fund. On line 117, for the construction code and license fee reimbursements and reductions, this is a decrease to the construction code revenues of 4,000 in the 24-25 by AM and 4,000 in the 26-27 by AM. And then for Senate File 207, this is Senator Putnam's bill, the AGO's estimated revenue of approximately 50,000 in 24-25 and 50,000 in the 26-27 by AM to the general fund. So moving towards the, I'll just do the net appropriations by fund starting on line 136. So for the general fund, it's approximately 5.1 million in the 24-25 by AM and 3.5 million in the 26-27 by AM. For the workforce development fund, it's 13.4 million in 24-25 by AM and 14.5 million in the 26-27 by AM. In the special revenue fund, thank you, Senator Pappas. For the workers' compensation fund, it's 13.4 million in the 24-25 by AM and 14.5 million in the 26-27 by AM. And then for the construction codes fund, it's 866,000 of additional spending, and then 150,000 in the 26-27 by AM. And that concludes Department of Labor and Industry. So moving on to the Bureau of Mediation Services, there on line 147, there's the Public Employee Relations Board planning, Senate File 303, which is traveling separately, but from the general fund and still comes out of the committee's target. It's 1.5 million in 24-25 and 1.5 million in 26-27. On line 150, to maintain current service levels for the Bureau of Mediation Services, it's 1.4 million in 26-27 and 1.5 million in 1.4 in 24-25 by AM and 1.5 in 26-27. And so just on line 159, all the funds are from the general fund. So it's an additional spend of 2.9 million in the 24-25 by AM and approximately 3 million in the 26-27 by AM. Moving on to the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals, these are all in the Workers' Compensation Fund. For the change items to maintain current rulemaking, maintain current service levels, my apologies. It's 480,000 in the 24-25 by AM of additional spending and 560,000 in the 26-27 by AM. And in for rulemaking, it's 100,000 in fiscal year 2024. This is for a total additional spend of 580,000 in 24-25 and 560,000 in 26-27. So for the net totals by fund, starting on line 175, so this is subtracting additional revenue from the appropriations. Our committee's target was 8 million for the 24-25 biennium of general fund spending and 6.5 million in the 26-27 biennium. And as you can see on line 175, we have exactly met those targets of 8 million in 24-25 and 6.5 in 26-27. For the Workforce Development Fund, it's 10.4 million of additional spending in 24-25 and 7.3 million in 26-27. For the Workers' Compensation Fund, it's approximately 14 million in 24-25 and approximately 15.1 million in 26-27. And then moving down to the construction codes, it's 866,000 of additional spending in 24-25 and 150,000 in 26-27 for a total additional appropriation of all funds of, this is on line 182, the last line, of 33.3 million in 24-25 and approximately 29 million in 26-27. And with that, I concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did have a question about, there's several lines that say federal funds, but they're included in the H column but not the I column. Could you just explain, do we have federal funds in the budget or no longer?
Oh, just a moment.
Senator Pappas, do you have a particular spot in mind that we could direct?
Well, we just skipped over line 170, but I've seen it several times in the spreadsheet.
Okay, thank you.
Within this these budget recommendations, we aren't appropriating additional federal funds over the base.
So that just indicates the base, and then line E would be additional funds. Got it.
Yep.
Thanks.
Senator Grunhagen.
Oh, just a quick question to the author, or otherwise one of the staff members. You know, there's a lot of fines in this bill, okay? So do the fines just go back to the agency, or how does that work?
Senator McEwen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Grunhagen. I think that's a great question. I'm not exactly sure how that works. Perhaps someone from, when we have testimony from the Department of Labor and Industry, they can give us a little bit more information, or I don't know if our council also has any information to provide. We'll get an answer, though.
Senator Grunhagen, we'll wait for the department testifier. Thank you. Okay, any other questions before we move to testimony? Okay, so we'll go to Ms. Fontaine for a walkthrough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So I will walk through the language as Mr. Olson just finished Article 1, so I will start with Article 2. That is on page 7 of the A5, delete all. Article 2 is the agriculture and food processing workers article. And the language contained in this article is from Senate File 61. This is the language from the Senate second engrossment. So section 1 on line 7.3, this would includes poultry processing in the definition of employer for the purposes of the Packing House Workers' Bill of Rights statute in chapter 179. Section 2 at line 7.6, this specifies that information regarding the employer's workers' compensation carrier and the right to workers' compensation coverage be provided by the employer at the start of employment. Section 3 on line 8.3, this section allows an employee to bring a cause of action for an injury caused by a violation of the Packing House Workers' Bill of Rights statute. Section 4, line 8.11, this specifies fines for a violation of information notice requirements. Section 5 on line 8.17 requires wages or commissions for migrant workers to be paid within 3 days instead of within 5 days as required under current law when the worker quits or resigns. Section 6 at line 9.1 amends the definition of recruit. Section 7 on line 10.1 clarifies that the disclosure required by the subdivision is in addition to the other notice requirements under Chapter 181. Section 8 at line 10.13, this increases the award amounts allowed for damages in a civil action brought under this section. Section 9 at line 10.20 increases fine amounts for violations of the Food Processing Employment Recruitment Statute. Section 10 at line 10.25 specifies that any recruiting disclosure form provided by the Department of Labor and Industry be provided in additional languages upon request. And section 11 amends the definition of agricultural labor. Section 12 amends the definition of employer. Section 13 at line 11.11 requires the statement that must be provided to migrant workers at the time of recruitment be provided in another language if needed and include information about workers' compensation insurance coverage. Section 14 at line 12.6 clarifies that payment may be required sooner than within 3 days of termination if a worker is discharged. Section 15 clarifies that the biweekly 70-hour pay guarantee is computed by using the highest of the federal, state, or local minimum wage. Section 16 at line 13.1 requires the written statement for deductions from wages by an employer to comply with the notice requirements. And Section 17 clarifies record-keeping requirements for migrant workers recruited by an employer. Section 18 at line 13.13 increases penalty amounts for violations of migrant worker protection laws. And the last section in this article is Section 19 at line 14.3. This allows the commissioner to assess penalties and provide the penalty to the migrant worker aggrieved by the employer's noncompliance. Article 3, this is the Nursing Home Workforce Standards. This is Senator Pappas's bill, and this is language from the Senate's third engrossment of Senate File 1621. So the first section in this article is at line 14.10, and that provides the title of this new sections of law to be the Minnesota Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board Act. Section 2 at line 14.13, this authorizes the Commissioner of Labor and Industry to impose liability on employers for violations of any rule establishing nursing home employment standards. Section 3 at line 15.7 defines terms for sections governing the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board. Section 4 at line 16.4 establishes the Minnesota Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board. It also specifies voting members of the board, provides for terms, vacancies, election of a chairperson, staffing, compensation, voting, hearings, investigations, and department support. Section 5 at line 17.14 requires the board to adopt rules that establish minimum nursing home employment standards based on the board's investigations of market conditions and existing wages, benefits, and working conditions for nursing home workers. Section 6 at line 21.1 provides duties of the board. Section 7 at line 23.16 requires nursing home employers to provide notices informing nursing home workers of their rights and obligations regarding applicable minimum nursing home employment standards and local minimum standards. Section 8 starts at line 24.8. This prohibits retaliation, including discharge or demotion against a nursing home worker for exercising any right under this act. Section 9 at line 24.29 provides for enforcement of the act by the Commissioner of Labor and Industry. And the final section in this article is Section 10 at line 26.1, and it requires the governor to make his initial appointments to the board no later than August 1st of 2023. Article 4 is from the underlying bill, Senate File 2782, and this is an article with the combative sports provisions. Section 1 modifies the term combatant. Section 2 is on line 26.23 that modifies the term combative sport to include professional or amateur kickboxing. Section 3 modifies the term combative sports contest to include professional or amateur kickboxing. Section 4 at line 27.6 modifies the term martial art. Section 5 adds a definition of kickboxing. Section 6 at line 27.16 modifies the definition of tough person contest. Section 7 at line 27.23, it reduces the advisory council from 9 members to 5 and exempts advisory council meetings on issues related to contest outcome challenges from the open meeting requirements of Chapter 13D. Section 8 at line 28.20 incorporates the most recent version of the Unified Rules of Boxing by reference as part of the chapter. Section 9 at line 29.12 modifies commissioner duties by including development of a procedure for regulating kickboxing and to approve regulatory bodies to oversee contests. Section 10 clarifies that all tough person contests are subject to the most recent version of the Unified Rules of Boxing and requires wearing of headgear in tough person contests. Section 11 at line 30.18 exempts certain amateur martial arts and similar sporting events from regulation under Chapter 341. Section 12 provides regulatory authority over kickboxing contests. Section 13 exempts martial arts and amateur boxing from regulation under Chapter 341. Section 14 exempts contests regulated by the Minnesota State High School League and other collegiate associations from regulation under the chapter. Section 15 at line 31.25 modifies pre-licensure requirements for promoters, combatants, and other licensees. Section 16 at line 33.27 changes expiration of licenses to be 1 year after the date of issuance instead of as it is annually, it expires on December 31st. Section 17 at line 34.1 modifies timing of contest fee payments dependent upon gross ticket sales and the value of complimentary tickets. Section 18 at line 35.9, this allows the commissioner to establish a payment schedule for promoters to pay referees, judges, timekeepers, and ringside physicians. Section 19 at line 35.12 establishes procedures for event approval. Section 20 requires a promoter to have an ambulance and two emergency medical technicians, I think, are at all combative sports contests. Section 21 at line 36.9 deletes language regarding the commissioner setting a schedule of fees for attending physicians at combative sport contests. Section 22 at line 36.24 prohibits combatants from using performance-enhancing substances and allows the commissioner to administer drug testing. Section 23 at line 38.1, this sets rules for challenging the outcome of a combative sport contest. Section 24 at line 39.26 allows the commissioner to impose civil penalties if a regulatory body for a martial arts or amateur boxing event does not submit bout results any suspensions to the commissioner within 72 hours after the event. That finishes the combative sports article. So we'll move on to Article 5. This is miscellaneous policy, so it'll be miscellaneous items that were or were not included in the underlying bill. And I will specify where these provisions came from. So Section 1, this is from Senate File 1566. This is Senator Umover-Bayton's bill that it clarifies that a recipient of economic development financial assistance is subject to prevailing wage requirements and enforcement provisions. Then we move on to several articles. There are several sections. So it's sections 2 to 4, 6 to 8, and 10 and 11. And these are technical changes to reflect the creation of a separate division of apprenticeship that will be separate from the Division of Labor Standards within the Department of Labor and Industry. This did come from the underlying the governor's bill 2782, these provisions. Then we have section 5, that's at line 41.8. This section allows the commissioner to issue compliance orders for the additional statutory references that are included. That is for the agriculture and food processing workers and nursing home workers. I do need to also add on to the technical amendment some deletions of citations to the Senate File 1988. It's the construction worker wage protection. That's traveling separately, but the citations were included at one point within this section. So I'll get those removed. Then section 9, this at line 42.20, this updates terminology used in the LEAP grant statute, and it also includes tribal governments in participation in the program. Sections 12 to 17, these are the sections that increase the OSHA fines to be consistent with the federal requirements for OSHA penalties. Section 18 is at line 45.6. This requires licensed health care facilities warehouse distribution centers, and meatpacking sites to create and implement a written ergonomics program. And this was the amendment that we had when the underlying bill 2782 was heard last week. So this is adding this provision to the governor's bill as it was already adopted in this committee. Section 19 at line 49.27 clarifies exemptions for refunding of fees, including when a license is not issued. Section 20 at line 50.6 reduces fees for reinstatement of licenses issued under Chapter 326B. Sections 21 to 24, lines 51.14 to 52.4, add definitions related to electric vehicle parking spaces for purposes of state building code and rulemaking. Section 25 at line 52.5, this modifies the definition of state licensed facility to include assisted living facilities for purposes of the state building code. Section 26 at line 52.10, this is from Senator Port's bill, Senate File 1368. It was sent from this committee to the Energy Committee, where they added a couple of amendments. Those are included in this language here. I just want to clarify that. This section directs the Commissioner of Labor and Industry to act on the new model commercial energy code by adopting each new published edition of ASHRAE 90.1 or a more efficient standard. Section 27 at line 54.1. This is from Senator Bolden's bill, Senate File 999. This was, as it was amended, I believe this is from the first engrossment language. If we didn't send it out or we did, either way, it's whatever was is the most current language for this bill. This section directs the commissioner to adopt rules requiring adult-sized changing facilities as part of the state building code. Section 28 requires the state building code to require a minimum number of electric vehicle-ready spaces, electric vehicle-capable spaces, and electric vehicle charging stations, either within or adjacent to new commercial and multifamily structures that provide on-site parking facilities. Section 29, this is from Senator McEwen's bill, Senate File 2735. This is, as it was amended in this committee, this deals with the issue of some solar installers that were bad actors and being able to get money from the construction contractor recovery fund.
Yes.
But however, this actually, what this does now, that was the original bill. This actually modifies the definition of special skill, which would have the effect of requiring certain work involving more than one special skill related to solar photovoltaic systems to require a license as a residential contractor. So these people would be paying, if they did more than one of these special skills, they would be paying into the contractor recovery fund as licensed contractors. Therefore, individuals could recover if there was a claim following enactment of this. Section 30, this is another section from Senator Bolden's bill, Senate File 999. This would simply allow the commissioner to use the expedited rulemaking process related to the adult-size changing facilities. And finally, Section 31 repeals an obsolete reference to transfer of employees from the Division of Women and Children. Section 6, or Article 6, this is a safe workplaces for meat and poultry processing workers. This is Senator Putnam's bill, Senate File 207. This is the first engrossment language. There are some modifications, mostly to remove what would be redundant sick and safe time language that is being carried in the Senator Pappas's bill for earned sick and safe time. So that was part of the modifications that were made, but I can, you'll see as I go through or if you read the language. Section 1 at line 59.3 specifies the title as the Safe Workplaces for Meat and Poultry Processing Workers Act. Section 2 at line 59.6 provides definitions of terms used in the Act. Section 3 at line 60.1 requires the commissioner to appoint a meatpacking industry worker rights coordinator. Section 4 at line 60.15 provides a meat processing worker the right to refuse to work under dangerous conditions. Section 5 at line 60.19 provides enforcement and compliance authority of meatpacking operations to the Commissioner of Labor and Industry. Section 6 at line 62.7 prohibits a meat processing employer from discharging or discriminating against a worker because the employee raises a concern about meatpacking operations, health and safety practices. Section 7 at line 62.27 requires meat processing employers to adopt a safe worker program to minimize and prevent musculoskeletal disorders. Section 8 at line 68.11 requires meat processing employers to provide workers information and notification about employee rights at least annually. Section 9 at line 68.24 allows an administrative law judge to order employee reinstatement and other relief to an employee who has refused in good faith to work under dangerous conditions. Article 7, this is just three sections. It is these sections relate to regulation of restrictive employment agreements. Section 1 is from Senate File 1258, which I believe is Senator Seeberger's bill. This is from the second engrossment of that bill. And Section 1 is at line 69.22. This prohibits financial settlements in sexual harassment or abuse cases between employers and employees from paying the settlement as wages or severance pay, regardless of whether the settlement also includes a nondisclosure agreement. Section 2 at line 70.1, this is from Senate File 405. This is Senator Mann's bill. This is also the Senate's second engrossment language that's included. This makes covenants not to compete in employment agreements void and unenforceable unless the exception for sale or dissolution of a business applies. Section 3 is also from Senator Seeberger's bill, Senate File 1258. This provides an individual subtraction from taxable income for damages received under a sexual harassment or abuse claim for injuries that are not physical injuries or sicknesses, or it provides a subtraction for severance pay received under a financial settlement that does not include a nondisclosure agreement. Finally, the last article is Article 8. This is building and construction contracts. This is from Senator McEwen's bill, Senate File 754. This language is from the first engrossment of that bill. Section 1 on line 72.10, this provides a definition of indemnification agreement. This is within the sections of law that are applicable to public contracts. Section 2 at line 72.16, this provides a definition of promisee. Again, this is within the definitions applicable to public contracts. Section 3 at line 72.20 specifies that an indemnification agreement in a contract for a public improvement or provision in a contract for a public building or construction contract that requires one party in a contract to provide insurance for another party for negligent or intentional actions. Oh, it provides that that's void and unenforceable, those provisions. Section 4, excuse me, Section 4 at line 73.17 adds the word defend to the definition of indemnification agreement to clarify responsibility for payment of legal fees. And finally, Section 5 at line 73.22 removes project-specific insurance from the list of exempted insurance requirements in private construction contracts. And with that, I am done with the walkthrough unless somebody has questions about what I just went over. Thank you.
Any questions for Ms. Fontaine? All right. Seeing none, Senator McEwen, do you have anything to add before we go to testimony?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. We can proceed to testimony. And I just would note that we did have the question from Senator Gernhagen, and if anybody has, any of our testifiers wanted to weigh in on that, perhaps this would be an appropriate time.
Okay, thank you. We will move forward with Kate Peruschek, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Labor and Industry. Thank you, Ms. Peruschek. Please say your full name and title for the record and move forward with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Kate Pruszek, and I'm Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Labor and Industry. I'm pleased to speak in support of many provisions in Senate File 2782 as amended, and appreciate the inclusion of nearly all of the governor's budget recommendations for the department as they support our economy, improve worker protections, and enable the agency to better meet the needs of the Minnesotans we serve. Before I dive into my testimony, I did want to address Senator Gruenhagen's question. And so penalty revenue for labor standards goes back to the general fund. There is one exception in the bill in Article 2, as Ms. Doyle Fontaine mentioned, for the migrant labor and agricultural and food processing workers. Those penalties would go to the worker. For OSHA, those penalties go to the Workers' Compensation Fund, and for combative sports penalties, those go to the Special Revenue Fund. So to begin, I appreciate the inclusion of key provisions in the bill that support working families, such as investing in prevailing wage, education, and compliance, which helps ensure that projects funded with public money are constructed and maintained by the best means and highest quality of labor reasonably available, and that people working on public works projects are compensated according to the real value of the services they perform. Strengthening workplace protections for agricultural and food processing workers, they are protected and aware of their workplace rights, and investing in outreach related to workplace rights and responsibilities under the Women's Economic Security Act. I also appreciate the inclusion of provisions in the bill that help address current workforce challenges and develop a skilled and diverse workforce, such as increasing LEAP grants, the Labor Education and Advancement Program, part of apprenticeship, to better support participation and retention of women, people of color, and Indigenous people in registered apprenticeship programs, increasing funds for the Youth Skills Training Program, for grants and program and administration to support more partnerships among school districts, employers, and community organizations to offer meaningful paid work experience to 16 and 17-year-old student learners, and then separating the Division of Labor Standards and Apprenticeship into two separate divisions to better support program operations. Next, I appreciate the provisions in the bill that help protect Minnesotans' health and safety, including keeping Minnesota OSHA penalties in line with federal OSHA for employers that fail to provide safe and healthy workplaces for their workers, to ensure continued federal funding and encourage employers to comply with workplace safety and health standards. Establishing a nursing home workforce standards board responsible for setting minimum standards necessary to protect the health and welfare of nursing home workers. Enabling DLI to provide plan reviews and inspections of assisted living facilities statewide to ensure that facilities designed for the elderly and vulnerable adults meet minimum safety standards. Modifying state building code requirements for window cleaning safety to incorporate safe window cleaning methods recognized by a national safety standard. I believe that was a Senator Jasinski bill, had something similar this session. Making statutory changes to the Office of Combative Sports to better protect combatant health and safety. Establishing a team at DLI to address workplace ergonomic injuries through training, education, and enforcement in the warehouse, meatpacking, and healthcare industries. While I'm pleased that the committee included $1.259 million for ergonomic safety grants so employers can make purchases to abate identified workplace ergonomics hazards, I urge the committee to fund the proposal at our requested amount of $2 million, as that would support approximately 75 additional employers to invest in specific equipment or practices that will reduce the risk of injury to employees and prevent musculoskeletal disorders. Next, I appreciate the provisions in the bill that help to mitigate climate change, including instituting an adoption framework for the Commercial Energy Code so that buildings can achieve an 80% reduction in annual net energy consumption compared to a 2004 baseline by 2036, adding requirements to the State Building Code for electric vehicle charging infrastructure within or adjacent to new commercial and multifamily buildings, and funding the growth of apprenticeship opportunities in clean economy occupations. Finally, I appreciate the inclusion of provisions that improve the department's ability to deliver quality services to our stakeholders, such as reducing certain construction code and licensing fees and allowing DLI to refund contractor recovery license fees when an applicant does not receive a license, reorganizing how information technology costs are distributed at the agency so that each work unit pays for the resources they use, and providing additional funding to maintain the current level of service delivery at DLI and offset inflationary pressures. DLI's goal in this budget was to support working families, develop a skilled and diverse workforce, protect Minnesotans' health and safety, work towards mitigating climate change, and improve service delivery at the agency. Thank you, Chair McEwen, for developing a bill that can help make these goals a reality. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Lauren Schotthorst with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and title for the record and continue with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lauren Schotthorst, and I'm the Director of Workplace Management and Workforce Development Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I appreciate the opportunity to once again address this committee and share our opposition to the Senate Labor Budget Bill and the numerous provisions imposing unnecessary new workplace regulations, workforce restrictions, and increased bureaucracy, record-keeping costs, and litigation risks on Minnesota industries, employers, and facilities. In order to keep my remarks brief, and since I've been before this committee before, I have submitted full written testimony. To start, our members across all industries are committed to safety. Not only is this commitment grounded in good business sense, many industries are highly regulated under very strong federal and state safety regulations already. Minnesota businesses also don't have the luxury of considering labor policies, state tax and spending, and regulatory decisions separately in a vacuum. While we do appreciate that bill authors have worked with impacted industries and facilities to address significant scope and workability concerns throughout the legislative process, we are troubled that instead of making it easier for Minnesota businesses to remain viable, let alone grow, this bill takes the opposite approach. Separate from the direct cost impacts to employers, the bill requires millions of dollars in increased state spending to implement and enforce the numerous new provisions and standards when it has been demonstrated that our regulating entities have difficulty enforcing the full breadth of standards already in law. Specifically, I will highlight concerning new provisions found in Article 3, Article 6, Article 5, Section 18, Section 27, and Section 30, and Article 7, Section 2. While we appreciate the intentions of this legislation, we continue to be concerned about the feasibility and cost of such proposals, along with unintended consequences. The private rights of actions contained in Article 2, 3, and 6 will lead to frivolous lawsuits and should be removed, as agency-led penalties and fines contained in Article 5 contain significant, substantial increases. Furthermore, we do not believe that these penalty increases should be on autopilot. Rather, these increases should require legislative debate and a vote, as this bill is doing through the underlying penalty provisions in Article 5. The Chamber supports an approach that limits additional cost burdens and unnecessary mandates on employers who are doing their best to comply with existing complement of state and federal workplace standards and keep Minnesotans employed. Because the totality of this bill would impede Minnesota's economic competitiveness, we respectfully encourage a no vote on the DE amendment and appreciate the opportunity to share our opposition with the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Next, we have Travis Berth with SEIU. Please state your name and title for the record and continue with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Travis Berth. I'm a servant at Cook at Serenity Care Center. I am here on behalf of my union, SEIU Healthcare Minnesota in Iowa. We support the A5DE amendment, the Senate Omnibus Labor Budget Bill. In particular, we support Article 3, which creates the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board. I started working at Serenity Care Center in December of 2020. I got hired at $12.50 an hour. After more than 2 years, I still only make $14 an hour as a server. That is barely above the minimum wage in St. Paul. Unless you give the workers in the industry a chance to set a better minimum wage, we will never attract the workforce we need. I thought boot camp in the U.S. Army would be the worst experience of my life. Boot camp was not that bad compared to working in a nursing home that does not have enough staff. When I work weekends, we have just two servers for two whole buildings. We are usually 30 minutes to an hour late. By then, the food is cold, residents get angry, and yell at the staff. We feel miserable for being late. Every day, some coworkers break down and cry. They say, why is he at a job where you feel terrible every day? When we get new employees, they almost always quit. The short staffing is worse now than when I started during COVID. Margaret was another cook. We tried to support each other when the job got tough, but she just got too stressed out and couldn't take it anymore. But I don't blame her. I'm thinking about getting another job too. I am not a policy expert, but I can tell you what it feels like on the floor of a nursing home. We don't get treated with respect. Our managers pay us as little as they can and get away with it. The problem is not the lacking of funding. The press says a lot of people are making money off of nursing homes. To get more money for workers, you have to give them the power to set standards. I am lucky. I have a union, and I get a voice. But too many workers don't have that chance. This bill wouldn't give them a union. It would give them some say. We know there are good people in management. All we want is a chance to sit down with them and build something to give them, to give our seniors the care they deserve. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Berth, for your testimony. Next, we have Aaron Hubert with Leading Age Minnesota. Hopefully I pronounce your name right. Please state your name and title for the record, and thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, for the record, I am Aaron Hubert with Leading Age Minnesota here on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. And I am here to testify in opposition to Article 3, the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board. 2,597 nursing home beds have been taken out of service since 2020. That is the equivalent of 52 mid-sized nursing homes. 15 have closed outright since that time, and just last week, a Crookston provider announced that they are closing their doors. 15 counties in Minnesota only have one nursing home. Article 3 does nothing to help stem that tide and may very well make it worse. Section 5, Duties of the Board, says that standards established by the board must include, as appropriate, standards on compensation and other working conditions for nursing home workers. What does other working conditions mean, as found on 17.22? Proponents have said that it is anything within the purview of DALI. Subdivision 4 of that section also appears to supersede the board's rules over other agencies. And oddly, the bill does not appear to take into account the expanse of other working conditions in determining the impact on nursing home rates, which I would imagine should be the concern of the Finance Committee. There is no recourse or remedy in this article if a nursing home cannot financially or operationally meet the standards required by the board. In fact, the current voting structure only requires a simple majority, which means that one stakeholder group could be entirely outvoted. There are nursing homes on the brink of closure right now. They are looking to the legislature for a sign of hope. Article 3 of the Labor Finance Bill does not provide any security nor any meaningful vote on the board, and so at this time we are opposed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hubert. Next we have Joe Demmel with Fresh Energy. Please state your name and title for the record and continue with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Joe Damel. I am the Managing Director of Buildings at Fresh Energy. Fresh Energy is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization based here in Minnesota. For the past 30 years, we have been advocating for policies that will achieve an equitable and carbon-neutral economy, and we appreciate the opportunity to testify on Senate File 2782, specifically Article 5, Section 26, regarding commercial energy codes. Buildings are one of the largest contributors to greenhouse gas emissions, and they account for roughly 40% of emissions, both statewide and across the country. And while we can and must address greenhouse gas emissions from other parts of the economy, we simply cannot meet our climate goals without squarely addressing the building sector as well. Article 5, Section 26 of the DE amendment would set Minnesota on a clear path toward building more efficient commercial buildings by updates to our commercial code, commercial energy code update process. In a state where we import 100% of the fossil fuels we use, building better buildings helps to keep our businesses more competitive so they can continue to invest in Minnesota. We support Senate File 2782 as amended and want to thank Chair McEwen for including Article 5, Section 26 in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Gavin Hansen with the Minnesota Business Partnership. Please state your full name and title for the record and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Gavin Hansen, and I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Business Partnership, which represents many of Minnesota's largest employers. The Minnesota Business Partnership opposes a specific section of this bill, Article 7, Section 2, a prohibition on non-compete agreements in its current form. We agree with adding protections for employees in industry where the non-compete may be unenforceable, using a wage threshold as one option for this sort of scenario. However, an outright prohibition on all non-competes across every industry is something we strongly oppose and would greatly impact our members. Minnesota is home to a diverse economy with many innovative businesses across a range of sectors, from manufacturing of optic and medical devices to machinery and electrical equipment, ATV vehicles, and aircraft. This diversity is what makes Minnesota's economy unique among its peers. Ensuring ideas that make our businesses unique remain secure is vital. Non-compete agreements are one of the tools employers use to secure information and prevent it from traveling from business to business. Non-compete agreements protect a company's intellectual property, confidential and trade secret information, investments in developing customer goodwill, and other legitimate business and proprietary interests. Employers and employees have invested time, resources, and brain power into developing information that is intrinsic to their livelihood. To remain a hub of innovation, we must protect work environments that foster the free flow of ideas and the ability to share important proprietary information securely amongst employees. Prohibiting non-competes will disrupt that workplace culture, hindering the free flow of ideas and stifling innovation in the process. Overburdensome mandates will not only jeopardize employees' hard-earned livelihood, but threaten the ingenuity that helps Minnesota's businesses thrive. As such, the Minnesota Business Partnership does not support the new mandates on non-compete agreements. I appreciate the opportunity to share our concerns with the committee. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen, for your testimony. Next, we have Ms. Meg Luger-Nicolai, Public Employees Relations Board. Ms. Nicolai, if you could state your full name and title for the record and continue with your testimony.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Meg Luger-Nicolai, and I am the current chair of the Public Employment Relations Board, and I've been honored to have a few opportunities to speak with the committee about the board's work throughout this session and our hopes that we'll have appropriate funding. And ultimately, what we want is to have the ability to work effectively for workers, for employers, and for the public. We have seen that in this budget, our funding has been set aside and set free to travel separately, and we are thankful to Senator Kupik for his efforts to move Senate File 303 and House File 62 to the floor. And so our only request is that in the extremely remote chance that there's some hitch in the get-along in that process, that hopefully we'll find a home in this bill as well. But we want to thank the committee so much for their efforts and the department for their work on this sweeping legislation.
Thank you, Ms. Luger-Nicolai. And with that, we've completed the testimony. Any questions or discussion from members? Senator Dornick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can we have, if we have a question for one of the testifiers, can we ask them? Is that
yes.
Okay?
Yes, you may.
Okay, I'd like to call up Ms. Hubert, if she's still here. Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Senator Dornick.
Thank you for your testimony. My question would be, so obviously you didn't like the part, Article 3, I think it was. Can you tell us what would help that, you know, the situation that's going on there?
Ms. Hubert, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Dornick. There are a couple of areas where we have reached out to the proponents, to Senator Pappas, and to the sponsor in the House. I think among those items, I think a narrowing of what other working conditions includes would be very helpful. It does appear to be quite expansive. I think one of the other areas that we remain to be pretty significantly concerned is that there is actually nothing in this article that provides money for nursing homes to give workers a wage increase, that's a real tongue twister, or to increase their staff. This is a regulatory board, not a funding board. So in principle, that is an underlying challenge. The other area that I would point to is the voting structure. So as it stands in the bill, there are 9 members appointed by the governor, 3 from labor, 3 from nursing homes, and then the commissioners or their designees of health, human services, and labor. That means that under a simple majority vote, which is what is in the bill today, any one of those 3 votes or those 3 stakeholder groups could be entirely outvoted, which means that a nursing home could raise really significant concerns and be outvoted. In theory, the 3 departments could raise really significant concerns and be outvoted. So we think a better idea is to ensure that at least 1 representative from each of those stakeholder groups are on the prevailing side. The other area that we would perhaps draw your attention to is the fact that there is no legislative oversight. While this is a rulemaking board, and I understand there are some limitations on whether legislative appointees can serve as a voting member of that board, it is strange to us that this is the first time a board of this scope would be enacted in the country and have no legislative oversight.
Senator Dornick. Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you for that. That was very informative. So I'd like to talk to you afterwards a little bit more. The one question I guess I'll just follow up with is the wage increase. I think we have a Senate File 7. Would that really help that issue if we could get a strong amount of money in that bill? Would that help that part of the bill or your problem?
Ms. Hubert.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dornick. We shall see what is in the Senate Human Services Omnibus Bill soon, and it is our sincere hope that it includes funding for caregiver wages, yes, as represented in Senate File 7.
Senator Dornick.
Thank you for that. That's all, Mr. Chair.
Before I go to Senator Pappas, I just want to mention we will be doing questions for the testifiers. We'll leave discussion for Thursday. So, Senator Pappas.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll just make a short response then.
Okay.
And call members' attention to page 19, which has extensive safeguards to make sure that if the recommendations are to raise wages, that that can't be done until an appropriation sufficient to cover the rate increase or federal approval of the rate increase is obtained. So I think there's plenty of protections in the bill to make sure that we don't drive nursing homes out of business.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. Ms. Hubert, did you have something to add?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas. That is correct, although I will point out that that language only limits any changes that would go above the forecast of the preceding year. So a change that could be under the forecast but still impact a specific nursing home would not have that remedy.
Okay, any other questions for testifiers? Okay, seeing none, the bill will be laid on the table. All right.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator
if
McKeon.
I might.
Or Chair McKeon.
Thank you. I just wanted to, just to say a quick word of thanks to the staff who have worked very hard putting this bill together, making sure that the numbers are where they need to be, making sure that the language is correct. A lot of staff worked very hard over the last week on this and other bills as well, but I know that this was part of their workload, and I want to thank them very much for this work.
Thank you, Senator. And with that, we will adjourn the Labor Committee.